Welcome to the PewterCast. I am Brent Allen, your host, joined as always by my good friend, Ren Daxt. Ren, feels like I just saw you the other day, buddy.
Right? The shortened work week, so to speak?
Yeah. We're normally recording this on Friday night. Here it is Thursday night. But the Buccaneers got their game flexed up a day, and so their entire week got flexed up a day, and guess that means our week gets flexed up a day, too.
Yes, and let's be honest, we're doing it so we can get better numbers for the show. We could have waited till Friday.
We could have. That's honestly not the reason why I'm doing it.
Is it because you're going to Star Wars tomorrow?
Actually, I just got back from Star Wars. That's where I've been.
I should not have brought that up.
Now Ren is pissed at me.
No, I'm just afraid you're going to ruin it for me because how I take such great pleasure in ruining The Mandalorian for you.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just wondering if you'd return the favor.
Right, right. Like,
because we don't want to ruin it for our special guest.
We do, and I don't know if he's planning on seeing this movie or not, but he has been up until recently
being indoctrined.
Yeah, and that's only been very recent. But we've got our guest here who has recently been going through the Star Wars movies, being indoctrinated into that. If you guys understand who I'm talking about now, of course you know we are talking about David Harrison of the Locked On Bucks podcast. David, welcome to the PewterCast.
Yeah, what's up? Thanks for having me on. Always great to talk to you guys in person or on the computer. Although this is a little bit awkward because I can see you, but you can't see me. So every time I roll my eyes at Ren, he's not going to be able to know.
It's too bad. We do have like a picture of you, and every time you talk, like it has like little waves that go out from it. But outside of that, yeah, you're right. We don't see you.
Nice. And yeah, I will see in the new Star Wars movie. I just don't know when.
Okay. All right. I think your co-host James is out like right now, probably as we're recording this, watching it maybe for like the third time.
Yeah, he actually just left the theater himself as well and said it was intense, emotional, and nostalgic. Going to take more viewings to fully grasp it all, but I loved it. That's Jim Jarko.
I 100% know what he's talking about, and I agree. I put out a tweet going, I'm going to have to sit on this one for a while, maybe see it a few more times before I'm ready to really think, you know, like render an opinion on it. But with that, though, we are not here to talk about Star Wars. We're here to talk about the Buccaneers. Woot, woot.
Are we going to talk about J.K. Rowling? Apparently, something happened.
No, we are. Do what?
Do I even get the bat? I don't even know what happened. I saw you throw out a tweet of support.
Yeah. We can talk about that off air. Not appropriate for this podcast.
Did she do something racist or something?
No, we'll talk about it after the show.
Wow.
But we will.
Super adult themed.
Do what?
Super adult themed. Like you can't even like.
Yeah, I just don't want to get into it on this show because you know what? Because here's the deal: football is an escape from all of that stuff. And I just don't want to talk about it here on this particular show.
Yeah, because Harry Potter and Star Wars is not. I agree. Based totally in reality.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about here. Hey, listen, what are we doing? They're talking about the Buccaneers. This is Bucking the News Show, week 16. And if you haven't been following along all season long, basically this is the show where, for Ren and I anyway, we get a chance to look at what has come out of One Buck Place over the last week. All of the storylines have really ran their course. The Buccaneers have finished practices for the week. Their work week is wrapped up, and there's only thing left for them to do is to play the game. So we're here. We're going to be talking about any roster moves that the team has made. We'll be talking about any headlines that have come out over the course of the week, and then we'll take a look at this Texans game coming up. We'll do that by by taking a look at the injury report, seeing if that gives us any clues as to what we might anticipate for this game, how it's going to affect the game, and then our own little game that we play. And David, you're welcome to join in as much as you want or as little as you want, where we do our predictions of the inactives, and we'll talk about who actually does get to play in this game. So with that, guys, why don't we go ahead and start all the way at the top of the list. We'll talk about roster moves, transactions that this team has made. There was quite a few. After several weeks of almost no transactions, the Buccaneers have several this week. Of course, the most prominent ones being Scotty Miller, Mike Evans, and Jordan Whitehead all head to the injured reserve. David, I'll kind of throw this out to you. We just sort of jump in and talk about these. The Mike Evans one surprises me only on a level of, doesn't he have to be off injured reserve to go to the Pro Bowl, or now that he's been nominated to the Pro Bowl or elected for the Pro Bowl, I don't know. There's that. But Jordan Whitehead was the curiosity to me. Any thoughts on these guys?
I mean, just hamstrings are just always, you know, tricky things to deal with, and those injuries never seem to heal the way that you want them to. I'm not sure how the injured reserve designation impacts the Pro Bowl status, to be quite honest with you, but I would not be surprised if Mike Evans wasn't planning on attending or at least playing in the Pro Bowl anyway, just because he does have that little bit of a hamstring, you know, history with that whole thing. And then with it kind of acting up on him this season, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he just kind of wanted to take it easy and maybe visited Orlando, even took part in a couple of the events if he was allowed to, but probably wouldn't play in the game. As far as Jordan is concerned, I think it might be honestly more of a necessity thing than anything. They need to clear some of the roster spots to bring on some of the players that they did. And then, of course, you know, just the severity of Jordan's injury.
What
and
honestly, is his injury? Do you know?
It's a hamstring. Yeah, it's okay. Also a hamstring. Just one of another hamstring issues for the Buccaneers right now. And what was really a little eerie in the moment in Detroit is when he got hurt and the way he got hurt. It reminded me a lot of the way that Kwon got hurt when he tore his ACL against the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
Just a screaming blitz right at the quarterback, and then just in the motion of trying to make the tackle, you know, pulling up and having an injury. So happy to hear that it's not like super serious, it doesn't seem, but you know, obviously a young guy who's having a really strong season, so you hate to see him finish on the IR.
So to take some of these guys' places, let's talk about who has been added to the active roster. The Buccaneers have signed wide receiver, because of course they need some wide receivers. Scotty Miller went to the injured reserve. Mike Evans went to the injured reserve. And spoiler alert, Chris Godwin still is not playing this week. So that's a very depleted depth chart. So they're bringing in help for that. But Cyril Grayson from the Dallas practice squad, sent him right off of Dallas's practice squad, is coming in. And a guy named Cody McElroy came off of our practice squad. And then a name that is familiar to many of Bucks fans, Schnelly. Schnelly's back.
Isn't Cyril, isn't that a character's name in one of the Harry Potter books that was penned by J.K. Rowling?
No.
No?
No, but I do think that it was a character in Game of Thrones that was penned by somebody, George R.R. Martin.
I don't think it was. I think it's a character name in a French novel by Demuse.
Possibly. Demures? I don't know.
Demus.
Hey, Ren, you tend to be my guy who knows things about these guys. What do you got anything on these guys?
What are we talking about?
Cyril Grayson, Spencer Schnell, or Cody McElroy?
Well,
McElroy, however you want to say it.
Well, Mike Evans was never going to play in the Pro Bowl. They just kept him off IR so he could make the Pro Bowl. And the reason Chris Evans isn't on Chris Evans, he was a J.K. Rowling character, right?
No. No. That guy was Captain America. That's who Chris Evans was.
The reason that Chris Godwin isn't on the IR is because they want him back because they want to win all the rest of their games. And if there's a chance for him to be back during the Atlanta game, he's not going to be put on IR. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we all know Snell. You know, he had that great game, the first preseason game in Pittsburgh, and everyone was like, oh, there's our new – he's going to make the team, and he's the new guy. And then he got, like – I don't think he had one more catch or any more yards or even barely saw the field, so the other three – preseason games, but he went away. But if you're having problems remembering who he is, he's the guy you thought was Scotty Miller.
Right.
Yeah. They look exactly the same.
Yeah,
like they're exactly the same. Cyril DeBergiak is a guy, like you said, has been on Dallas practice squad.
Yeah.
He hadn't played high school. He hadn't played football since high school.
Wow.
He's like a 7-time All-American track guy from LSU. You know, I don't really know that much about track, but I don't really know a lot of millionaires or people, you know, and the top 100 paid athletes in Sports Illustrated. I don't see any track guys on there.
Mm-hmm.
So after sort of his track career dried up, or, you know, however that goes in, you know, that microcosm of society over there, he decided to come back and use his speed and try to make it in the National Football League. And he's stuck around on a few practice squad teams because he is lightning fast. And we need a return guy. And so here he is.
Will he be the return guy?
Yeah.
Like over That's Justin Watson? Here.
That's what he does. He's a return guy. Yeah, over Justin Watson. At least I think on kickoffs, I think it's going to be his job over Dare's.
Oh, really? Is that?
Yeah, and I probably mean, punts, too.
Is that, and David, I mean, feel free to chime in on any of this. Is that because with the injuries, we don't want to put Justin Watson out there for added risk of injury because we don't need to lose another wide receiver at this point that Jameis at least has some established chemistry with?
It's certainly possible. I mean, obviously, you know, as you get more and more into the depth of your wide receiver chart, you don't want to make unnecessary risks. I don't know if Grayson will go back there and return kickoffs or punts or not this weekend specifically. He definitely, obviously, he's got the speed background, but like Ren said, he doesn't have a whole lot of actual football background. He did have 8 catches for 147 yards this preseason with the Saints. That's where he ended up with after Dallas, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, he's got some, you know, some raw athleticism. I mean, you know, the big knock on track stars who turn into football players is, you know, on the track, nobody's trying to hit you when you run a straight line more often than not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these guys tend to lack a little bit of break and burst and ability to manipulate a defender and so on and so forth. Grayson's 5'9", you know, 183 pounds. He's essentially a thicker Spencer Schnell, except Schnell is a football player, whereas Grayson is a track star. So we'll see what role they have, but I would be highly surprised if Grayson has any sort of real game plan, you know, contribution as far as the offense is concerned, just because of what little time he has been with the team. I think that'll be Schnell's role to fill, is to try to get in there and essentially play that Scotty Miller role, mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, Ren, and see if he can replicate, you know, that 7-catch, 119-yard performance he had against the Steelers in preseason.
I will take the under.
Yeah, it's probably a smart bet. Yeah.
And then the last guy who was signed is actually a tight end, not a wide receiver. The other two guys are listed as wide receivers, but this guy's a tight end. Cody McElroy, I know absolutely nothing about this guy. Ren, you got anything on this guy or no?
He's an ex-baseball player. Is that what he is? Really? Yeah, he's an ex-baseball player. That's about it. It's just, you know, somebody did an article. It was probably Almond. It sounds like his type of article, where he was talking about all these sort of like players that are on the Bucks roster that aren't football players first. You know, we just talked about, you know, Cyril Dvorak, and now this tight end guy that came from other sports. And so basically these guys are just really good athletes and they're trying to find some type of niche place to groom them in. Because if, you know, they can find their diamond in the rough, they're going to have, I kind of feel like it's like they're looking for their George Kittle, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But, you know, George Kittle sort of came out of nowhere. I understand it doesn't make any sense about the two sports things, but you know, they're trying to find this guy and you don't know that they just might become a really great weapon like George Kittle and become like, you know, something that other teams crave but can't find because they don't take these chances on these guys with traditional football backgrounds, which again has nothing to do with George Kittle.
All right. Well, just for sake of completion, I guess, to replace them on a practice squad, we released actually wide receiver Trevion Thompson, who we just signed last week to the practice squad, and have signed defensive back Herb Miller to the practice squad. We've also signed a wide receiver, Jaden Mickens, to the practice squad. We'll talk about them should they ever actually make it to the active roster, like, you know, next week, because that's going to be it.
Hey, David, isn't that Herb Miller another one of those guys that's not like a football background? Do you know?
I'm not sure his total background. I know he came out of Florida Atlantic, spent some time with the Chiefs. I was kind of looked at like just, I know a couple folks that cover the Chiefs, and kind of a guy with like some raw ability, made some plays and practices in the preseason and all that, but then at the same time had plays where just kind of just inexplicably lost on the football field. So a guy with definite upside, but just not a whole lot of consistency at his floor level. To me, kind of looks more like a safety than a corner as far as his physical abilities, but at the same time, he's 6'2", 190 pounds. So, I mean, how physical of a safety can you be at 190 pounds? It's really hard to kind of pigeonhole him right now. I think he's definitely on the practice squad for potential more than anything else. And then Jaden Mickens actually is a guy, I mean, if you're going to get excited about a practice squad guy, you know, Brent, you kind of alluded to him. I think Jaden Mickens is probably the most exciting guy. He's actually done some things on a football field before and has some potential, especially in the return game. But that's, like you said, Brent, unless he gets on the field in 2019, that's not something we're talking about till July at the earliest.
All right, so we'll move on with that. Because I agree.
All right. Dave and his answers.
Yeah, I love it. That's why we bring you guys on. And David, I don't know if I actually explained this to you. You know, this is one of those, Ren and I have for a long time talked about, you know, how do we get more guests on? And we just haven't had that over the course of our week. So we thought, hey, this Buck and the News Show is a great way to get, you know, like you and James and like our fellow podcasting friends to be able to come and just discuss the Bucks. You know, this is our most conversation laden show. So thank you for being here. Hey, let's talk about some headlines. Yeah, David, I don't know if you've written any of these. We'll find out. Let's not bury the lead. The big news this week, and we've already talked about it a bit on our show. David, I know you guys have talked about it over at Locked On Bucks. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Shaq Barrett have been named to the Pro Bowl. Woo woo. Go those guys. I don't have a question. Yeah, I don't discuss.
Is there anything left to talk about these guys? I mean, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. This is our new show. Yeah, I don't know. David, would you like to chime in on this at all?
I mean, it's great news, of course. Good for those guys. Well deserved. You know, obviously, there's always the underlying issue of the fact that Lavonte David also greatly deserves to be in the Pro Bowl, yet he's not. Mm-hmm. Do you think
he greatly deserves it this year?
I think that Lavonte David is a Pro Bowl player every year, but I mentioned it on our show and I couldn't remember at the time where I had heard it because I listen and read so much stuff just throughout the week, but it was Greg on your show, about that he hasn't had a whole lot of splash plays this year. And I brought that up on our show and talked about it where, you know, you hear guys like Devin White when he had that touchdown and talk about how Lavonte has really been critical in helping him develop his ability to see the field and do all this other stuff and do everything. Lavonte's just, he's a much better leader and mentor, it seems to be, on this team than he is a national spotlight grabbing type of guy. And unfortunately, as much as the Tampa media, Buccaneers fans love him for everything that he is and represents, that's not going to gain a whole lot of attention on Good Morning Football and, you know, ESPN and so on and so forth. And when those things don't happen, the peers and the coaches around the NFL who are doing this job with all of their available time, like, and that's kind of the point I made on the Locked On Bucs show is they don't have, like, these guys aren't, like, I understand the theory is, well, we have one-third players, one-third coaches, one-third fans. So the two-thirds of the people who are living this as a career and profession will kind of counterbalance the fandom. But at the same time, how much, you know, if you're Fred Warner with the San Francisco 49ers, how much are you studying off-ball linebackers, your peers, during the season? You know, like, I would put more credence in the NFL Top 100 list because that's done during the offseason when these guys kind of have time to go back and kind of relive the season through the eyes of other people and so on and so forth and catch up for things that they missed. But if you're, you know, a linebacker in the AFC hunting for a playoff spot, getting ready to play, you know, I don't know, the Indianapolis Colts, you don't care what Lavonte David has been doing. Mm-hmm. You're worried about you and you're worried about the Colts. The Pro Bowl is a great achievement for any player, especially their first time, and especially the younger guys. I think the older guys kind of understand that it's more pomp and circumstance at this point than it is actual achievement, but it's still good to see. And, you know, and the point that I made on our show is I don't like necessarily pulling it down, but, you know, at the same time, you have to understand what it is.
I want to ask you guys this because I've thought about this with what Greg had said on the show, which effectively is if you look at Lavonte's numbers from this year and what he's done from this year, he really maybe this really wasn't a snub. Like, maybe he just really hasn't had that kind of a Pro Bowl year, especially when you compare it to what others at his position have done this year. But I also wonder, you know, the Pro Bowl being one of those things where, like, once you're in, you tend to stay in. So, like, does Lavonte have enough of a year that if he had had a couple of consecutive years in the Pro Bowl, it would be enough to keep him in, you know? But, like, while it may not be enough to get him in not having been in before, would it be enough to keep him in had he already been in the previous couple of years?
Well, that's the big question, right? Because you can look at Luke Kuechly's numbers and they're, you know, given a, you know, one more here in this column and one more here in that column. But him and Lavonte Davis are kind of close. You know, he has more tackles, but then you bounce that out with Lavonte's got a huge lead in tackles for loss. But, like, sacks, interceptions, forced fumbles, like, one guy, they're always, like, one away.
Right.
And so you can look at that. But, yeah, you're right. If this has been – if he'd made the Pro Bowl 3 years in a row and he throws up these numbers, chances are, you know, he probably would have made it this year too, because, you know, it wasn't anything terrible. And I also agree with David, and, you know, and it's not only that you're not caring about what Lavonte David does. What if you don't play him?
Right.
You know, what if you're in the AFC and you're not in the AFC South this year? You don't play Lavonte David. So you're never going to think about him. At least your AFC South, you'll think about him for 1 week, you know, but now the Texans are here. The guys that voted on the Texans, they've already voted. The Pro Bowl's already out. So you can't even count those guys. So it's an imperfect system. And yes, it's a great honor, but it's really hard, I would say, to get these things. And I'm sure they help you out for contract negotiations and things like that, but I'm sure there's also, you know, these advanced metrics that the scouts bring in there too, and just kind of put these up head to head with a lot of people love to do with Lavonte David. It's like, well, look at these guys' stats. He's a 9-time Pro Bowler. There's Lavonte's, and they're just as good or better. But again, I guess I'll repeat the question again. David, did Lavonte David have Pro Bowl season?
No, I mean, this year, no. Like, okay, this year,
there we go.
Like, when you look at, and that's something that Mark Schlereth So something I did write was his comments on Jameis Winston off of his own podcast. And when I listened to the episode, he talked about the Pro Bowl himself. And something you mentioned, you know, is every fan, you know, he's in Colorado. So Broncos fans everywhere are talking about how one of their safeties got snubbed. It's okay. Well, who are you taking off the roster to put your guy on there?
Right.
And, you know, when you look at the NFC linebackers that are on the roster, as a Buccaneers fan, you might like Lavonte David more, but can you really sit here and say from an unbiased and impartial stance that Lavonte David is better than Luke Kuechly, is better than some of these other guys? At Bobby best, Wagner. it's an arguable topic of conversation. Like, you could talk it, but there is no player where you can just say, slam it down on the table without a shadow of a doubt, Lavonte David is better than that linebacker who's on the roster. So that means that there's room for interpretation. And, you know, again, like you said, Brent, nothing is perfect. This whole process is imperfect. I mean, there are retired NFL players covering primetime games right now, and the most profound thing I've heard them say is, if that guy holds his block longer, that quarterback doesn't get sacked. Well, bravo to you, Mr. ESPN man, but that's not really dropping the football insider knowledge that people are kind of thirsting for when they're watching these games. But guess what? Not that long ago, that dude was voting for Pro Bowlers. So think about that. Like, everybody listening to the show has a profession or a job field that they're in or have been in. Is every single person in your profession and career field the smartest, you know, the smartest guy on the block? The NFL is not, you know, different in that aspect, that not every football player is above the line of standard that people would expect when you're picking these rosters.
Was it Booger?
I'm not saying any names.
You're afraid of Booger?
It's coming for you. It's coming for you. All right. Well, let's talk about Shaq Barrett for just a minute. Warren Sapp saying of Shaq Barrett about the franchise record, because we know Shaq Barrett this last week tied Warren Sapp for the franchise record for sacks in a year. Two games left. Potential that he breaks it. It's possible. I don't know if he's had any two-game streaks where he didn't get any sacks. I feel like he's probably had one or two of those, actually, especially in the middle part of the season. But his words to him were, go get it. So, you know, Shaq Barrett definitely... Well, I don't know. What do you guys think against the Texans, especially, that this could be the week that Shaq Barrett breaks it?
David? Sure.
Yeah? David?
I wouldn't go as far to say he will, but the chances are very good. I mean, Deshaun Watson, something that, you know, some people have been kind of griping about lately is Deshaun Watson, especially when the game's kind of on the line. There's a lot of pressure on him. There's a lot of pressure on this franchise from top to bottom. He's starting to hold the ball longer than you would want him to. He's not making the best decisions in the pocket with getting rid of the ball and where to go with it. And those are the moments that a guy like Shaq Barrett can come through and break that record. And I think it's great that Warren is going out there and telling him to go get it, because, one, there's nothing Warren can do to stop him. Mm-hmm. So he might as well just get on the train anyway. But two, just, I mean, you guys have seen him at the facility and everything. Like,
sure.
Warren Sapp wants the Buccaneers to be a defensive team. Like, if the Buccaneers make it back to the Super Bowl, he wants it to be on the back of the defense. He loves Mike. He loves Jameis. He loves, you know, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, if Warren Sapp gets what he wants, the defense is going to carry the team to the championship and do all those things. So for Warren to see kind of this defense playing the way that they are, I'm sure it's making him pretty happy. They're nowhere near where that unit obviously was, but I'm sure he's excited to see this defense getting some attention and some press finally, and, you know, it's good for him.
Yeah, I got to tell you, one thing that I really enjoy, and you get this, I think, when you go to the games, and they always at the games, there's former players. They're doing, you know, autograph signings and different things like that. But when you see like a Warren Sapp, a Derek Brooks, a Rondae Barber, and you realize really quick, like, they're still Buccaneers at heart. Even a guy like Warren Sapp, who went to play for another team for a few years, like, they too are now Buccaneer fans, and they want to see the Bucs do well. You know, specifically, as you said, with Warren, he wants to see the defense do well, but, you know, they just, and it's the way they talk about it. Like, I never hear Warren talking about the Raiders, and I'm not saying that I listen to everything that Warren puts out, but I never hear him talk about the Raiders. That's, I never see pictures of him out at the Raiders facility. I see him here, you know? I see him on our sideline often. So, you know, the fact that he is cheering on somebody to go get it, because if that's what they're doing, you know, that only just means that they're winning. They're doing well, you know, and he wants to see the team do well, and it doesn't affect him that. So, all right, continuing on Shaq Barrett, though, per Greg Allman, Spotrac has Shaq Barrett pegged with his next contract value at 4 years, $63 million. That's about $15.7 million a year. We have spent some time talking a little bit about what might be a good number. Just curious, does that sit well with you guys? Does that sound about right for a Shaq Barrett? Would this be a number I hate, like, we'd be okay with, not that it's not that we're paying that particular, we're not writing those checks, you know, but, you know, what do you guys think? Is that sound about right? 4 years at $63 million, Dave?
I mean, it sounds great to me, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think that we're probably, you're probably looking more in the ballpark at 16 and a half. And I kind of look at it as Za'Darius Smith, as a little bit of a comparative. Za'Darius Smith, for any Bucs fans who don't know, linebacker for the Green Bay Packers, came in free agency this offseason from the Baltimore Ravens. He's actually a guy that I had kind of put my eye on for the Buccaneers, hoping they would go after him. Mm-hmm. They didn't, and believe me, I'm happy with what they did instead. But what he did in the offseason, he signed a 4-year, $66 million deal with the Green Bay Packers, which averages out to about $16.5 million per year. Mm-hmm. He was 26 when he signed it. He was coming off of an 8.5 sack season with Baltimore. Had some other seasons where he had like 3.5, 5.5, so on and so forth before that. Shaq is going to be 27. He's going to turn 27 next November, so he'll turn 28. Sorry. So he's a little bit older. Shaq is coming off of, like, he had a couple 3.5 sack seasons. He actually had a 5 sack season with the Denver Broncos. So the kind of the lead up to that big contract signing with Smith and with Shaq are kind of similar. And then, you know, I know that Shaq said he was going to take a hometown discount, but I feel like it was Za'Darius Smith's going to get $16.5 million per year coming off of an 8.5 sack season. Shaq's coming off of a season where he's probably going to lead the NFL in sacks, which kind of bumps that number up a little, maybe $1 million, $1.5 million. But then you take that hometown discount, kind of knock it down, maybe $500,000. And then the other thing to look at is the tag number. So, you know, and you guys talked about with this, Greg, as well, is whether or not he's going to get viewed as a defensive end or as a linebacker, because right now there's no edge designation when it comes to tag numbers. And I mean, the Buccaneers have him listed as a linebacker. The NFLPA has him registered as a linebacker. So I'm going to go with linebacker numbers, which is less than defensive end numbers. They go up about $500,000 every year, give or take a few, you know, tens of thousands here and there, which if that happens again, would move the linebacker tag for next year up to $16 million. So if you're Shaq, I don't know that you really are happy taking 15.5 or 15.4 if the tag number itself is $16 million. Mm-hmm. But a hometown discount, you know, tag number 16, I could probably go get 17.5, 18 on the open market. I'll sign here in Tampa for 16.5. I think that's doable. I think it's reasonable. And so that's why I kind of think 16.5 is probably where we're more likely looking towards.
Ren?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. Good conversation.
Honestly, my answer would have been something like don't know, don't care. Like, I don't know what 15.5 is. I know this is why, you know, there's a flavor for every person in these podcasts. Mm-hmm. Like, David just went on for like 3.5 minutes bouncing numbers that I'm sure are right. Like, obviously they're right, but I just don't care enough to go find somebody with the same age bracket to come off with the same sacks, mm-hmm, to put it up to next to what Greg Allman says that Spotrac says, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I trust Spotrac. I trust Greg. That's enough for me. It's going to be around somewhere like that. I'm not going to go, and I'm not saying this is what you did, David. I'm saying you came prepared. I'm just saying that I'm not going to go dig around and see if my number's different from that, mm-hmm, because it doesn't matter. Like, Shaq Barrett's going to be a buck, and it doesn't really freaking matter what he gets paid because he's going to be a buck.
Yeah, and that's the most important thing, is that Shaq Barrett is going to be back in Tampa, mm-hmm, for the 2020 season. So, yeah, and at the end of the day, I mean, you know, Spotrac, and, you know, there's another one, was over the cap, under the cap, something like that. Yeah. Greg Allman, Rick Stroud, myself, you, me, you know, all of us, none of us know what the number is going to be. We're all just out here speculating and dancing around, but mm-hmm, this is what SB Nation pays me for. So, and I like numbers. If you
listen
to Lockdown Bucks, you know I like numbers.
And that's why I had you on for this particular week. But, you know, it's one of those things, though, David, like, I hear you say, you know, the difference between 15.75 and 16.5, like, mm-hmm, yeah, that's $3.25 million. Like, that's a lot of money to anybody. Yeah. But is that really the sticking point that they're going to quibble over? You know what I mean? Like, that's the point that always gets me in these. And I don't know how much they're really going to quibble with something that is like, on a percentage wise, that small. Mm. So, you know, yeah, I think these are great numbers. It's less than actually what I thought they were probably be looking at.
I think it's low too.
It does. It's
definitely lower. And that's the big thing. Like, his agent is probably hoping he gets a free agency. Like, his agent probably, the thing thing that his agent hates that Shaq has done already is come out and publicly say he wants to be in Tampa and he's willing to give a hometown discount, because his agent doesn't, I guarantee you, doesn't appreciate that conversation. But that's right. Shaq being Shaq, and you know, he's just a genuine dude, and that's something that, you know, talking to him this offseason when he signed with the team, that was something that we learned very quickly. You know, you guys do this, you guys have been doing this longer than I have. I mean, you have conversations off the air with people, and that's kind of where you get some of the better information, and talking to Shaq off the air before, both before and after, and then catching up with him again in training camp. I mean, this is a guy that you can just, like, he's very genuine in what he says. He's not really going to dance around a question. He's not really going to dance around a topic. He's going to tell you what he's really thinking in the moment. And really the biggest time we learned that was when we asked him, when did you know that you were leaving Denver? Fully expecting we had some talks, but it just didn't work out. But no, he comes out with, about a year and a half ago, I knew my time in Denver was up. I'm like, whoa, a year and a half ago, bro. Like, you just played a full season with them. And that's not something you usually hear from these players, but that's where Shaq isn't, you know, he's not a politician. He's true to himself. He's true to what he wants. And so he's going to come out here and do it, and whether his agent likes it or not. But yeah, you're right. If he gets on the open market, I mean, you're definitely talking north of $17.5-18 million for Shaq Barrett, I believe, on the open market.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we're definitely in that spot where I can't even comprehend those numbers, you know, from just a practical standpoint. So last thing about Shaq Barrett, BA said in one of his press conferences this week, talking about Shaq Barrett, said he ain't going anywhere. So as Ren said, whatever it winds up being, doesn't matter. It matters, but for us, the ultimate thing is Shaq Barrett's going to be a Buck. He'll be back next week or next year. So definitely looking forward to that. All right. Next headline that I have, I don't know. It's more, it seems like we're getting more and more of these every week. To sort of the attaboy news headline. DeMar Dotson voted by his teammates the Ed Block Courage Award. It's an award that is voted on by teammates, which I think is kind of where the honor of that comes. But it is players who exemplify commitments to the principles of sportsmanship and courage. It's kind of what the tagline on it reads. But yeah, DeMar Dotson, good for him.
They got him a gold watch, man. As
it's a retirement gift. I was wondering that. I was actually wondering that. Like, is this the, we know he's leaving.
This reward parting is gift. So meaningless. I've never heard of it.
Oh, really?
I've never heard of it. Mm. And they're giving it to Dot as they push it. Like, you know, they're like, here's your gift. As they're, as he's reaching for it, they're walking out the front door, you know, he grabs it and they slam the door behind him. And it's like, there you go, buddy.
Well, it's like, remember, like, Vincent Jackson got the Walter Payton of the Man of the Year nomination, like, on a year where he blew out a knee, like, in the second game. It didn't play for the entire rest of the year and still got the nomination, like, from his teammates, which is good. It's cool nomination. It just...
That's the most prestigious award in the NFL.
Sure. And there goes... I mean, effectively his last shot. But, yeah, it had that strike to me, you know, that it was that sort of attaboy.
It's a very much thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, David, does Amir Dotson, does Dot have a shot at the Ring of Honor?
No.
Exactly. Here's your gold watch. Goodbye.
I like DeMar from what I've honestly never actually talked to him in person, but from what I've observed of him, I guess, other people have told me things about him, so, and I trust their opinion. He seems like a great dude, and, you know, I'm happy for him, you know, to get nominated for a leadership award, basically a leadership and contribution award. But, you know, I mean, he's a guy who's going to end up being one of the longest tenured Buccaneers in his franchise history, and hopefully people appreciate him for it. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, there's a lot worse you can do in your life than have an 11-year pro football career. So having that is an accomplishment.
It's not a bad way to spend your 20s and early 30s, you know?
Right. So, yeah.
No, I get it. And certainly I don't mean to diminish this award for DeMar. I really don't. But I really did have that thought in my head, Ren, of, is this like a retirement gift for him? So, all right, moving on off of that. Let's talk about Jameis Winston for a moment. This week, of course, I mean, we knew this in the middle of the game, all right? So this isn't news. This has been a headline. Lots of people have been talking about it this week. Jameis Winston became the first player in NFL history to throw 450-plus yards in back-to-back games. I think the chances of this next thing happening are pretty much nil, but if it does, David Evan Winter over there at Bucks Nation had a piece about this really kind of being a blessing in disguise this week with the wide receivers and everything being so taken out. What are your thoughts on potentially, you know, Jameis Winston, well, not potentially, he's going to be playing with a lack of his familiar wide receivers, the potential of maybe reaching 450 for another week?
I mean, never say never. You know, I know obviously without Chris and Mike, it's definitely going to be hard. But, you know, Rashad has picked it up a little bit and done some good things. Spencer, you know, we'll see how that whole thing works out. And, and I mean, beyond Rashad, I mean, until Justin Watson does it again, I don't think I'm really comfortable talking about him as being a main contributor. But listen, it's a passing league, right? Everybody likes to point that out. It's a passing league for one. And for, I mean, two, it's just eventually something's got to give as far as the defense. Concerned. Like if they go all out to stop the pass, then there's gonna be some running space, and there's, you know, maybe we see the screen game come alive again, like we did against Arizona. Something, you know, there's all those X's and O's involved there. Willie gets 450. I wouldn't bet on it, but it's a possibility. I mean, I wouldn't say he can't do it. I just wouldn't put money on it to happen. Yeah, I don't know if that's really a good answer to your question.
If he gets 450 yards this week, he's gonna get it 7 yards at a time, and Cameron Brate's gonna have 35 receptions. Like it's not happening. Happening. If the Texans come out and double Perryman, what do you do?
Throw it to
Cam Brate first. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
For 7 yards at a time. Across the middle. That's what you do. And that's what's going to happen. So, yes, he's not going to make 450 yards. But I'm kind of interested because I didn't click on the article because Evan wrote it because of personal reasons. So,
Ren doesn't want to give him that click.
What's the of course, I'm kidding, but I didn't click on the article for personal reasons. But so what was the, what was it? The silver lining?
The blessing in disguise. David, do you want to tackle that?
Sure. Yeah. So basically what Evan wrote is that if Jameis Winston come out and get a win or really even just be competitive and, you know, take the ball up and down the field, put some points on the board, you know, make his essentially show that he can make receivers better as a quarterback, then that helps him as far as securing a future with the Buccaneers. That's basically what the gist of it was. And I'll be honest, when I saw it in the queue when he was writing and working on it, I actually got a little bit disappointed because, like, oh man, I was going to write that exact column, but, you know, Evan beat me to it and so on and so forth. That's the perks of being laid up recovering from ACL surgery. But I actually had a different once I read it.
Sign me up for that.
Once I actually read it, he actually came at it from a different angle than I did. I came from an angle of player development because, and you know, I don't know you guys. I know sometimes you guys catch our show. I don't know how many episodes you listen to, but Jameis comes up pretty much every episode. So you've heard by now that I am pretty much as 100% sure as I can be that Jameis is coming back at least next year. So looking at that, honestly, I think this is a moment, and it was funny because Mark Schlereth actually touched on this as well, that Jameis has the opportunity to develop even further than he already has as a quarterback, because you get those times, and this is, I'm taking this directly from Mark Schlereth's podcast, where he goes out there and he basically has a yes-no decision mechanism, where he makes a read, he sees traffic, and then he goes, is that Mike Evans? Yes, throw the ball. No, don't throw the ball. And that's kind of what he described as happening in that first interception against Indianapolis. Is he's looking at the Bermuda Triangle of defenders on a slant, but he says, oh, it's Mike, throw the ball. He doesn't have Mike now, but he also doesn't have Chris now. And we know that Cam is kind of a favorite, but I don't think Cam has ever been a guy with Jameis to where I'm throwing the ball no matter what I see around him, in front of him, behind him. I don't think Cam's ever been that guy. So really, this is going to be the first time this year we see Jameis Winston go out and not have a guy that he can just automatically throw the ball to when he's in a hurry, when he's in a panic, or he's just feeling dangerous, if you want to call it that.
Right.
There's no guy out there that he can rely on that way. So this is a moment where Jameis Winston can kind of take the next step, hopefully, or even if it's a small step in his development, becoming a quarterback that understands the entire field versus understanding his matchup and wanting to dominate that matchup. And I think it's a really big opportunity for teaching for Byron Leftwich and Bruce Arians with this quarterback. And if it goes well, and that doesn't even necessarily require a win, to be honest with you, but if it goes well, then I think it could be a very important day in Jameis Winston's development.
So
is Jameis Winston the MEP of the league?
What is that?
The most entertaining player.
Oh yeah. No, most definitely. Yeah. There's nobody more entertaining than Jameis Winston. Are you kidding me?
Is he second in the race for MVP?
Not at all. Not even close.
Why? Why is it not even close? He hasn't thrown for enough touchdowns, hasn't thrown for enough yards, hasn't
One, it's his reputation. Two, it's the team record. And three, it's the interceptions.
His reputation. That's interesting, because I'm trying to figure out how to craft a question to ask Jameis Winston if enough is enough. Because, you know, you look at all these these numbers that he's put up this year, and all the national pundits talk about interceptions. Now, it's changed a little bit because he's thrown back-to-back 450-yard games, and people are starting to take notice. You've talked about Mark Schlereth a couple of times. Brent, that's the guy that you like, that's the new guy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, yeah, I'm aware. He's my new favorite. Now? Oh, yeah. I love this guy. Every time he's on our call and I'm watching at home, I am a big fan of Mark Schlereth.
Right, but he started out with, like, you know, Jameis throw. It was, what do you know, an early interception in a game. And he jumps all over him. He's like, oh, Jameis, blah, blah, blah. And by the end of the game, he's like, I can't believe this guy. Like, look, he just keeps coming. Then he called the next game, and he started off a big Winston fan. And Winston, I think we won that game, probably. Mm-hmm. And he threw for a lot of yards. It was probably a 300-yard game, not a 450-yard game. And now Jameis Winston's, like, his favorite player. Like, why isn't Jameis in the MVP discussions? Why isn't Jameis on the Nissan College Heisman House ads? Like, why is Jameis Winston talked about nationally as being one of the best quarterbacks in the league? Because all I hear is that he's crazy, he stinks, you got to move away from him.
Yep.
Then just because he throws for, what, 70 yards more two games in a row, now he's like, they got to keep him? Mm-hmm. Like, what does he got to do?
Yeah.
Go
ahead, David.
It's really funny because so Derek over at Bucks Nation, he does some podcasting for Bucks Nation, is actually the one that turned us on to the Mark Schlereth podcast, and listens to him and his co-host talking about Jameis. And it's this kind of the same circle. Is there's actually a part, and I quoted it in the column that I wrote for Bucks Nation, but there's a part where he starts off his kind of line of conversation with talking about how amazing Jameis Winston is and how great he's been playing lately. And then somehow that switches into, let me break down this really bad interception that he threw. And that's just Jameis Winston. And that's Jameis Winston as a player. That's Jameis Winston as a narrative. That's Jameis Winston as a topic of conversation. Is no matter what, you cannot have a conversation about Jameis without it having some really good high points and some really bad low points. But what I'm noticing is across the board, because you mean guys like Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, Good Morning Football folks, you know, people that, that are across the board in national media, even when they sit there and talk about some of the negatives that Jameis brings to the field, they all end up saying the same thing, that the Buccaneers have to bring him back because the upside is just so high up there that you cannot move away from this guy yet.
Yes, because he's putting up MVP numbers.
I agree that he's putting up MVP numbers, and I feel like if this team, you know, and you guys talked about this too, I know, Ren, you hate getting down these lines of conversation, but, you know, a kick that's, you know, a few inches, you know, to the right side of the goalpost or the wrong side, you know, a couple of bad routes early on in the season. I mean, this team could easily be looking at 9-10. Yeah, exactly. This team could be easily looking at 9-10 wins this season with just a couple of
12.
David, we are looking at 9 wins this season, potentially.
I mean, like they could have 9-10 wins right now. Yeah.
Fair. Because I was going to say, we'd be looking at closer to like 11-12 wins this season.
Right.
Which is crazy to think how much that's going to, you know, you're only talking 3 games there. At that point.
Almost a quarter of the season.
Yeah.
You know, it's a thing. It is a thing.
It is a thing.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? Oh, it's Jameis Winston.
But here's the thing. I do think that what David said earlier about his reputation and the interceptions, that is what sticks in people's minds when they think of Jameis Winston, particularly if you start looking at ideas like MVP or something like that. Because I know I deal with that all the time, living out of market. And David, I'm sure you do too, living out of market.
Almost, like, definitely.
You run into somebody and they go, oh, you're a Bucks fan? Oh, you guys got to get rid of Jameis. Like, because they don't know. But Dren, to go back to what you're saying, of it's like the Jameis Winston experience of, you come in with this thought in your head of who Jameis is or what he's like as a quarterback, but then you start watching him and you're like, well, that one really wasn't his fault. And oh my God, did you see what he did here? And oh, well, look at him. You know, it starts to turn, and it's really that, like, unless you watch Jameis. 40,
they just put up 30 points.
Right.
Again.
Oh my God. They've put up 30 plus points, 11 out of their, you know, 14 games so far this year. Like, like, and we
how
do
many
this.
Rushing yards they have this week? 11.
Right. And, you know, you sit there and you just go, like I think we, and I'm speaking honestly as a collective fan base, and I know there are people out there that just hate Jameis, and no matter what he does, they're going to want to get rid of him, no matter what. But as a collective fan base, we just go, I mean, we know what Jameis is on good and bad, you know? And the, you know, I mean, God, even VH3 had a conversation, you know, I'm sure you guys saw, where they asked him about the great quarterback of Jameis Winston, and his first words were, man, that guy can light it up. Mm-hmm. He can light it up. And then two sentences later, he's like, and he turns the ball over. Both are true. Like, neither's a slam. It is what it is, but he can still light it up. So I have one more thing that I do want to talk about, but before I get there, Ren, I know you had said you had maybe one or two things. I don't know if you still want to talk about, or David, were there any other headlines you guys wanted to discuss before we move on?
Move on to what?
To injury report and all that other stuff.
Oh, yes. David, you're big draft guy, right?
I do enjoy the draft, yes.
Yes, okay. Feel free to rephrase anything you'd like.
excuse me, guys. I'm going to check out here for the next few minutes.
Yeah, see you later, Brent. No, Brent, we discussed this. I want to know, and Dave, you might have been nice enough to listen to the pod and heard what I had to say. But, you know, where the Bucks are picking now and where they may end up be picking, even if they lose the next two, you know, somewhere between 12 and 15. What's helping the Bucks is something I've said, like, three wide receivers are probably going to go before wherever the Bucks pick. But what's hurting them is that three probably tackles are going to go in the top 10. Then we don't know what's going to happen with our defensive line. You know, people think interior defensive line, people think edge guys. But if we sit around at like 15, or, you know, we're down by 18, 19, all the tackles, first round tackles are going to be gone. There's not going to be any interior linemen as it sits now, roughly, that are going to be a reach. So you're looking at maybe like the fourth edge guy, the third or fourth interior guy, the fourth, even fourth wide receiver. Is it crazy for the Bucks to start thinking about taking the number one running back off the board in the first round?
It's not crazy at all. When you're drafting where it looks like the Buccaneers might be drafting, that's essentially what you have to start doing. You have to start looking for the most impactful player at a position of need that you have right now. Or you have to start thinking of, is your team close enough that you can warrant moving up in the first round? And that's kind of where we go back to the whole conversation of, you know, this team could be looking at 9 or 10 wins where we're at right now, which means they'd be looking at 11 or 12 for the season. Like you guys said, if the people in the building, if the coaches and Jason Light believe that they are a 12-win team, that minus some early growing pains and some, you know, blown whistles when they shouldn't have been and so on and so forth, got screwed out of that actual 12-game record. Like, we always have the conversation of, you are what your record says you are. Well, that's not 100% true all the time. And right. If this team inside the building thinks that they're a 12-win team with a 9-win record, they may feel bold enough to where, if we're a 12-win team and we move up, we could turn that into a 13-win postseason run versus, you know what I mean, saying pat. So that's a question that I think is going to get asked as we get closer to draft time, because if that's the case, and like you said, those tackles are there, you move up and get one of those tackles, you secure that edge of your offensive line, and perhaps that gets you that extra break that you need, or that extra millisecond that Jameis needs to hit the target properly, you know, so on and so forth. But if they stand pat, no, it's not outside the realm, because once you get past like pick 15, you're really looking for guys who have starter potential, but they may need some time to grow into that role. And when you talk about a running back, you have Ronald Jones already, you're okay with letting him grow into that role. I'm leaning right, like, if the draft were today, which thank goodness it's not, I'm honestly leaning at free safety. And I know everybody loves Mike Edwards, and I'm a big Mike Edwards fan, Andrew Adams, but there's a reason those guys are rotating, and it's because neither of them have really solidified themselves as a starting free safety. So if they can go out there and they can get a number one or a number two free safety in the draft because they fall down that far, like when Jamal Adams got drafted, where he got drafted by the Jets, everybody called them crazy because there's no way you're getting the value at the safety position for the pick they spent on him. Well, they are, but it's because they were very, very fortunate Jamal Adams turned into what they thought he would turn into. Picking where the Buccaneers will probably be picking, that's a great spot to take a risk on a top shelf safety in that class, because it's kind of like you're looking at like OJ Howard. Like, if OJ Howard turns into a top 10 tight end, then nobody's really going to question that draft pick. So taking a safety in the first round, and the pressure on him is turn into a top 10 or 12 safety in the National Football League, that's doable. So when you look at a guy like Grant Delpit, that's something that you got to keep in mind, because he presents right now some of the skill sets that you need need to really put this defense together. But also have to remember, there's guys that are going to draft in the first round right now. I see you shaking your head, Ren. There's guys that are going to draft in the first round that we're not even talking about right now.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be guys that fly up the board that, you know, we don't even know about because, you know, neither of us. I'm sure you're into it more than I am. It's because you brought up Delpit. It seems to be like, like the revenge Evan Winters show. You know, it's like we got it on Twitter about Delpit. But so I'll just, you know, throw that out there. If that kid from South Carolina, Kilroo, is that it? Interior defensive lineman?
The second best
interior defensive lineman that in the consensus right now is the kid out of South Carolina. There's Brown from Auburn. And then the second guy is this Kilroo or Kilnu or something. Would you take a safety over the second? Would you take the number one safety, no matter who it is, or the second best defensive tackle? You know you're on mute, right, David? David, did he leave us?
I'm not sure. That's a good question.
Did he dodge the question?
No, sorry, my clock was going off.
I thought you were texting Evan to make sure.
What do I want to respond with? So interior defense. So I like the defensive line as we have it right now. I feel like William Golston is probably going to get replaced this offseason. That's just kind of
what? A feeling
that I have. Yeah.
Why?
It's a feeling. It's not an information thing. I'm not saying Will Golston hasn't been playing well. That's just kind of a feeling I've had.
You know, he costs like $4 million.
Yeah.
You
can replace him.
For $4 million?
We'll get into that later in the offseason. It's not a money thing.
You're over here giving Shaq Barrett $18.5 million. you're kicking a guy who's had his best season in 3 years out the door because what? He's too bony and he's cost $4 million.
No, not at all. I'm a big fan of Will. Trust me. He's one of the first guys I sought out when I got to training camp this year. But I don't see the defensive line as being a primary draft spot right now. But again, the way that things develop during the offseason, we don't know what's going to happen with Sue. We don't know what's going to happen with Golston. Vita's doing great and everything. You know, they do need some depth pieces there, but you can find depth in other areas. Me personally, I'm always the kind of guy who wants to attack your biggest need first if the talent matches the need. So if you're talking about drafting like the fifth safety in the class in the first round, no, I'm not a big fan of that. I'm also not a big fan of drafting, you know, the third or fourth best interior defensive lineman or defensive lineman in general in the first round or the third or fourth or fifth best tackle in a class either. But then again, I mean, how strong is that class? So these are all things that are going to have to get figured out. If you're putting me on the spot right now, like if they don't bring back Ndamukong Suh and they draft a defensive lineman in the spot they're in right now, I'm happy with it. But if they bring back Ndamukong Suh and they draft a defensive lineman, me personally, I'm not happy with it. But again, it's all going to depend on the players that were available at the time.
So you would rather have the second beat defensive interior lineman than the best safety?
With the team in the current construction now, no, I'd rather have the best safety, the best free safety over the second.
You know, the only guys under contract is Vea, Golston, and...
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. Like, come April, we'll see how the defensive line looks. If the defensive
I'm not asking you in April, Vita, David. Vea. I'm asking you right now.
Yeah, so right now with Vita, Sue, and Will, and Bo.
Sue's a free agent. He's gone. Bo's a free agent.
Yeah, that's April, Ren. That's what I'm saying. So you tell me. So did we bring Sue back or is Sue gone?
Gone.
Then I'm down for the defensive lineman. Okay. Because if you don't fill the void you just lost from the season you had before, you're starting behind the eight ball anyway. So if we lose Sue, then I'm down bringing a defensive lineman in. Yes.
Is that the only stipulation or if you lose Bo?
No, it's not the only stipulation.
Golston? David, I'm telling you, man.
All kinds of spider veins.
David, I've played this game with Ren far too long. Yeah. I'm telling you, you said the spider veins. He'll come at you every little which way until you agree with him. It's best just to be like, all right, cool. We'll move on.
No, yeah, I mean, like with this defense, especially, I mean, the secondary is not getting any older unless you bring in a free agent, which if you do, you're bringing in one, maybe two at the most. I can't see you bringing in more than one, to be honest with you. But the reason that this defense is going to work, the reason that Todd Bowles' defense works is pressure on the quarterback, which starts, as you guys know, with the front seven. So if your front seven gets weaker through free agency and in the offseason before the draft, you have to find a way to at least reestablish the status quo with what is making your defense work in the first place. If you allow your front seven to get weaker and then you secure your back end, but your front end is weak, it's going to trickle down to your back end and you're just going to have a worse defense than you had to begin with. So that's where all these things trickle down. Again, so if Sue is here in April, then I think they need to address the secondary. If Sue is gone, then that's kind of where Will Golston comes in. Like if Will Golston leaves and there is a guy that can replace Will Golston and at least make it equally as effective, or if not better, then I'm still down with the defensive lineman.
I'm interested. Well, I know you're not going to tell me, but I'm interested why you're trying to kick Golston out the door. You have your reasons. You said, yeah, I know you have your reasons, or you've heard something. I got it.
Haven't heard anything. That's what I want to make clear, that I haven't heard anything. So I feel like that Will Golston is doing an outstanding job. He's doing a very good job for what he's being asked to do. However, I feel like when you look across this roster, you have decisions that you got to make with Jason Pierre-Paul. You got decisions you got to make with Carl Nassib and all that stuff. What I feel like Todd Bowles is going to want is more of a dynamic player. And Will Golston, he's never kind of been that dynamic force on the defensive line. And there are some guys in this class that are going to present themselves, because they always do, that are going to present themselves as having a little bit of that dynamic ability. And if Todd Bowles sees one of these guys and says, and this is one of the things from this offseason, if he's got a football face, is kind of what he says, he looks like a guy that I can make my system run with, then I could see this team moving Will Golston, bringing in a young guy in the draft. It's not so much about dollars as much as it is about making that front line a little bit more dynamic, because as a right tackle, if you've got to worry about a dynamic defensive end on that side where Will Golston is a little bit restricted in what he can do, then that makes the ability of JPP or Carl Nassib or whoever's on that side of the field, that just gives them more to operate with and to play off of.
Okay, I'm not saying you can't upgrade Golston. Why can't you just keep him? I mean, he makes like half as much
as
Bo Allen, but he starts.
Yeah, I mean, they could very well do that as well.
I'm gonna jump in here and put an end to this, because you guys.
What happens if they get a
safety? No, we're done. Agency. We're done. Host rules.
We didn't discuss that.
I'm stepping in and putting an end to this whole line of conversation for anybody out there who's actually still listening to us and turn us off. Because oh my gosh, you guys are
an absolute sadist.
I have one more thing I want to talk about before.
Is it about safeties and free agency?
It is not. And this one is specifically directed towards David. David, I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on this, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Apparently earlier, a guy from the NFL named Chris Wessling had said he's not really convinced on Jameis. He thinks he's a good passer, but not a good quarterback. Yeah. David, I don't know. I felt like this might be a question right up your alley. Is Jameis a good passer, but just not a good quarterback?
I mean, when I hear something like that, and when I hear something like that, what I feel like he's saying is he's got arm strength and he's got the ability to find a receiver, mm-hmm. but he doesn't make decisions that are the best for his organization. Mm-hmm. And what I would say is that it's just like everything else in life, where what's best for the moment, the team, the organization, all that stuff is really in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. So what Chris thinks at NFL.com is fine for Chris, but that's not what BA might think. That's not what Jason might think.
Right.
And it kind of brings me back to families, right? Like, Brent, I don't know how you raise your kids, but mm-hmm. I raise my kids a certain way. You raise your kids a certain way. Like, I'll just throw this out here right now. My children are all under the age of 18, are allowed to cuss in my house. Like, they're allowed to cuss in my house. They do it regularly. We play video games together. They're on the headsets and they're throwing out cuss words and all this other stuff. And we have our reasons for doing that.
Out of curiosity, how old's the youngest
one? 12.
Okay. So you have between 12 and 18. And yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
So do you agree with that method of raising children?
I don't have a problem with it, but my wife would.
Right.
So.
And that's perfectly fine. And guess what?
Yeah.
She's right. And I'm right, as long as we make it work. Like, as long as my children aren't the ones out there robbing people of 7-Elevens and doing all this other crazy crap, mm-hmm. then it works, as long as they turn into productive members of society.
Right.
That's how football teams work. As long as what Jameis Winston puts on the NFL field is working towards a productive product of football, then we're fine. And mm-hmm. what we're seeing in these last few weeks of play is that even with some of Jameis's deficiencies, this team can win if the right things are in place. And some people like to knock them, like, well, if he needs an offensive line, he needs a defense, and he needs this, he needs that, then why is he a franchise quarterback? And I would say, show me a franchise quarterback who doesn't have needs to do what they do. Outside of Tom Brady, there's not a whole lot of quarterbacks that you can look at in the National Football League and say if they don't have the right system around them, that they're not going to thrive, or they're at least not going to meet their maximum potential.
David, to quote you, I think on this particular line of thought, like, not even mm-hmm. Brett Favre would be Brett Favre if he didn't have the things around him.
Number one rated defense.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, that's something I actually kind of intended to go back and dive into a little bit deeper. I just haven't gotten a chance to, but I'm actually curious, like, Brett Favre, the year that the Packers won Super Bowl with Brett Favre, mm-hmm. they had the number one ranked defense in the National Football League. And I understand it was a different, type of game back then, but the Green Bay Packers defense that year was allowing less than 2 touchdowns a game. They were allowing 13 point something points per game. I don't care what era you're in. That's crazy scoring number. Like, that's a crazy amount for defense to hold teams to week in, week out. And that's what he had. Now, go every year after that where he didn't win Super Bowls. Did he ever have a defense that prolific again? And I'd be willing to bet that he probably didn't. And without having those defenses, he didn't do the things that he did. Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there's a lot of Packers people who think that Aaron Rodgers is actually a better quarterback in this sense than Brett Favre was. Mm-hmm. You know, talking about being a better, you know, team manager and game manager and all that stuff. And I would probably agree with him. How many Super Bowls has Aaron Rodgers won? So being a better quarterback isn't really the final missing piece of the whole thing. Putting the product in place and the system in place and the team in place is ultimately what it's all about. And the quarterback has the biggest chunk of it, but it's not the entire chunk of it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of where I have problems with some of these things. And again, a lot of these things are learned behaviors. Like, Jameis Winston came into a franchise where he's going to be the hero. Like, we want to know why Jameis Winston goes out and plays hero ball. Dude is drafted number one overall to be the hero of this franchise.
Right.
He's going out there and playing hero ball because you expect him to be your hero. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start doing some things to where Jameis doesn't have to be the hero. And when Jameis doesn't have to be the hero, when they're playing from ahead or they're playing with a defense where he feels confident, okay, if I go three and out on this drive, I feel like my defense can keep us in this game. Well, when your quarterback feels like that, they don't have to go out there and try to throw a 45-yard, you know, crossing route into triple coverage in Minnesota and get their wide receiver decapitated while throwing an interception, because your quarterback has confidence that they don't have to be a hero in the moment. Mm-hmm. But when your quarterback comes out and they're down by 21 points in the third quarter, whether they throw an interception or not, that quarterback's not going to, if that quarterback is a hero, that quarterback's not going to come out and eat the ball. He's going to fling that thing in there and hope that it lands into a receiver's hands. Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't.
Okay. I just like to point out to the jury that Brent let that answer go on a lot longer than our draft back and forth.
That is not true. It's not true.
So what if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers trade for Patrick Peterson and turn him into a free safety, Ren?
What about it?
Then what would you do in the draft?
I'm not taking a safety in the first round no matter what.
No matter who it is?
No matter who it is.
What if
the best one's
Trevor Sikkema says that Grant Delpit will be the next Jamal Adams in 2 years' time?
Delpit can't tackle. We see who is the cornerback that Cleveland drafted?
Green?
That was first, yeah, he was number one and he kept falling because he doesn't want to stick his nose in there. That's what Delpit does.
I will tell you, I mean, Greedy's been struggling with injury a lot, but I will tell you that Greedy's tackling as an NFL defender has looked night and day better than in college. I almost wonder if he was making business decisions, which, you know, I mean, I'm not going to tell those kids what to do in their position, but you're right. Grant definitely has some tackling issues, but we're not asking him to be Jordan Whitehead. We've already got Jordan Whitehead.
That's
right. Brent is so mad at me right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And we also already have Justin Evans.
Yeah. Who may or may not be. Hey, let's talk about the guys who are currently on the roster.
Instead of talking about future roster people and future games, let's talk about right now.
And we'll move on with the show. I appreciate the conversation.
It's been 11 games. The rookie safety's not working out. How about we draft another safety in the first round?
Another? Well, who did we draft in the first round already?
Draft another safety, period.
Oh, I got you. Okay, my bad.
In the first round.
I had the wrong punctuation on your sentence.
It's all right. What was that comedian that used to make the symbols? It's probably way before you guys' time. Never mind. He was a regular on Carson. Brent.
Oh, yeah. What's up, guys? What's going on?
I know. David answers tend to do that to people, but try to stay with us.
Hey, injury report. Let's talk about the injury report. That's all the headlines that I had for this week. All right, real quick. We'll run through this fairly quickly. Our time is ticking on us here. Houston Texans, they got two people that are out for this game, Jacob Martin and Benedrick McKinney. I'm a fan of the Buccaneers. I don't follow other people. But other than that, all their guys are going. So it looks like they're a fairly healthy team for the most part. The Buccaneers, however, not so much. Aside from all the people we put on IR, Bo Allen, Chris Godwin, and Tanner Hudson are all out for this game. Tanner Hudson got added with a concussion in this past week. Chris Godwin is still out. Ren, you mentioned earlier Chris Godwin and the fact that he's not been put on IR, you know, it gives us a little bit of hope that he might possibly be back for next week.
Yeah. I heard that they might play him at safety.
Oh, yeah.
There's apparently a spot there.
I mean, I feel they should probably see what he can do on the defensive line since Ndamukong Suh is not coming back.
How about quarterback? Can we put Chris Godwin in at quarterback? What do you think?
We could.
Maybe he can call plays for Byron Leftwich while he's at it.
His character's not an issue. Maybe he'll get a Heisman commercial.
Yes. Secure his Ring of Honor spot.
There we go.
All right. So those guys are out, but Carlton Davis got added to the list late with an ankle injury on Thursday, actually today. He is listed as questionable. He'll play for sure. Ryan Jensen's full participation most of the week. Donovan Smith is back. He was limited participation. He is still listed as questionable. But generally at this point, that means he's going to go. So, yay for Donovan Smith coming back. I don't know how that's going to affect, the way they use their tight ends this week, because apparently last week, they really relied on OJ to help out Josh Wells over there. And number 71, the Watford came in as an eligible receiver a lot, like a lot of plays. So, but other than that, and then Jameis Winston, of course, we know what's going on with him, with his thumb. He actually has a little bit of a knee issue going on as well, but he was full participation by today. So he will certainly go. Other than that, Anthony Nelson is back. He's been off the list for quite a while.
Those
hamstrings take a while. So that's our injury report. So with that, David, do you have any, you know, does this give you any clues or hints as far as what you think we might see going into this game on Saturday?
I feel like, so last weekend I made Byron Leftwich our Buccaneers X Factor. It's what we do every weekend for the game. We pick one person, you know, they're the X Factor, the key to the game, or so to speak, whatever you want to call it. This weekend I'm making it Todd Bowles, because you've already got a young secondary and now you're out Jordan Whitehead and Carlton Davis. I'm with you. I don't see any way he doesn't play. We haven't heard anything, or we're not hearing anything that would say that he's probably not going to play. So I think he's still going to be out there, but the bottom line is he's still got an ankle issue going on. So, you know, that's something you have to be aware of. And the Texans, just they've got a really legit receiving core. DeAndre Hopkins is obviously the leader there, but then you've got Kenny Stills and you've got the other guy whose name I can never remember for some reason. Where's he at? Will Fuller. I don't know why I can't ever remember his name. All three of those guys have the potential to do a lot of damage against a very young secondary. So anytime you're missing guys from an already young group, it's going to be problematic. So Todd Bowles has got a very big challenge ahead of him. So we'll see how it boils out.
All right. Ridden, you got any thoughts as we head in towards this game on Saturday?
I want us to win.
I'm with you.
Yeah,
I'm with you. All right. What do you guys, let me ask you this, because I believe of this back half of the season, and certainly of these last two games, this game feels like the biggest test for the Buccaneers. Ren, you have gone on record saying you think the Buccaneers win out. Do you still feel that way? How are you feeling game going in? What?
Well, yeah, you nailed it on the head. Yeah, I wouldn't change my mind. They haven't lost yet, so why would I?
But they've lost a lot of people. To the finish line. I mean, they haven't lost yet, but they've lost a lot of people.
Doesn't matter. Jameis, you know, death taxes. Jameis throws four interceptions and 30 points go up on the board. Like, that's the new saying. You know, it doesn't matter. I am a little scared about, you know, the safety position for the Buccaneers, because, you know, I've heard that, you know, that's a weak place we should probably shore up. But
I can't really hear Ren. Are his levels okay, Brent?
I don't know. If he gets that microphone out of his nose, no, he's fine.
You told me where to put it.
Fine. I'm just joking. You're fine, Ren. Go ahead.
No, it's jokes. You know, I've had plastic surgery on my nose. I was in a car accident when I was younger.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
None.
I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and I smashed my face on the dashboard, and it broke my nose. But it looked straight, which was a whole odd thing, because the septum was, like, all pushed to one side, but the nose itself was straight, except it just would not stop bleeding.
So how about the game this weekend?
Any more nose jokes? What are we talking about? The safety position?
No, I was just talking about the game as a whole.
Oh, am I going to change my mind off from like weeks ago saying the Bucs are going to go straight? No, you're right. It's going to be, of course, it's their biggest competition. But I just don't fear the Texans like everyone else does. You know, I like Deshaun Watson, obviously, as a player. You know, in my mind, I call him, you know, baby Wilson. He's like a little Russell Wilson, you know, not quite as experienced. You know, Hopkins, it's real hard to argue that he's not the best wide receiver in the league. Julio Jones is probably up there, but his numbers just fluctuate so up and down. I don't think it's anything, it's Julio's fault, but, you know, but D-Hop always at the end of the year always gets numbers, and he doesn't have a flaw in his game. But besides that, I don't fear the Texans. I don't. Their defense has steadily crapped the bed since Phillips left as their defensive coordinator. Clowney's gone. Watt's hurt. Vernon is a starter. Like, you know, if the I understand the Texans are like 9-7, but they're an okay team that plays in a shitty division, and they're 9-7, and they just got beat like, what, they get beat by 30 by the Broncos 2 weeks ago? But then the week before that, they beat the Patriots? I don't know, but the Patriots aren't that good anymore. So I'm just not afraid of them as everyone else is. Is there going to be shootout? Probably. Is Watson going to make some plays? Yeah. Are they going to run the ball on us? No. Is Watson going to make some plays with his legs? Yeah, outside the pocket, break some containment, get some deep balls to get him out of trouble, and it's going to be terribly frustrating? Yeah. Is Jameis, even without Evans and Godwin, still going to find ways to get it down the field and put up 30 points? Yes, he is. So it's, you know, are we going to win? Sure. Why? Matt Gay hits a 65-yarder. That's why.
All right. Well, it comes to everyone's favorite part of the show, predictive inactives. Let's figure out who we've got on the field. I gave you three out the gate. Bo Allen, Chris Godwin, and Tanner Hudson will all be out this week. David, would you care to take first crack at adding four more names to this list of inactives?
Sure. So I'm going to go with MJ Stewart and Cousin Daniels. I have no idea how to say his name.
Cousin.
They've been inactive for, is that what it is?
According to the, to
yeah,
the
they've been inactive. So they're kind of the easy ones. And then I've got McElroy and Grayson. I think, you know, they're kind of the two new guys to the active roster. I don't think they'll be active.
Okay.
Yeah. I just don't think they'll be active.
Ren?
I think they are because of special teams. Mm-hmm. Like I said earlier, I think Grayson's going to be one, if not both, of the kick returners. That's the only reason they have him. He's not there for wide receiver help. He's there to
I hope not.
Yeah, he's not there to like, you know, come in and he might get a jet sweep at, you know, maybe, you know, but why? So he's going to get in. And the only reason why is because they just don't dress two, you know, they don't dress two tackles and two guards. Mm-hmm. They dress one besides the starters, and those are the two guys that are going to sit, and that's why those other two guys are going to start.
Except they didn't do that last week, Ren.
They didn't.
No, they started all of their healthy offensive linemen outside of Donovan Smith. They all played, and which is why, and this was real.
Oh, that's right, because they had Josh Wells because they needed him to help.
Right, and then they had Earl Watford and Aaron Stimey and Gerald Hawkins, which Gerald Hawkins was backing up Josh Wells, but they also had Aaron Stimey in there as well. But yet MJ Stewart still was inactive.
What's funny? And I just bring this up because I'm being a smartass, and we've talked about how the national people don't know what they're talking about. I watched this draft today, and well, I didn't say watch. I clicked on it and scrolled down to the Bucks. I really don't even care what anybody else takes at this point right now. And I scrolled down to the Bucks, and they signed Delp. You know, who do you have? Delpit, safety out of LSU. And the guy put, though, even though Sean Murphy Bunting and Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean have made strides this year, he included MJ Stewart in that. He said, and MJ Stewart have made strides this year. Mm-hmm. They still need help in the back end. Delpit. MJ Stewart's played what, like, he played the first three games because the rookies weren't ready yet, and he's been on, like, been street clothes.
I think he's been
year.
Inactive more than he's been active. I really think that's true.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah, definitely. For sure. So, you know, it's just one of those things that just gets me, how those national people don't know anything.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like Booger McFarlane, right, David?
I mean, it's like we said earlier in the show, like, just because they got a national job doesn't mean they're, you know, hey, every group has them.
Yeah, it's hard to cover 30 to all 32 teams, but I'm still sticking with the tried and true formula on this one. I'm going chalk. Hawkins is down, and who's Stymie. The other guy?
Yeah.
Stymie.
And then who are your other two? You need two more.
What? Davey got those right. Stewart and Daniels.
Yeah, and it's those last two. I struggle with those last two as well. I just wonder how healthy Donovan really is, and if he's not, like, I think he'll go just because he's a warrior, but, you know, if he's not that healthy, then I could see them kind of loading up a little bit. But yeah, I mean, those last two, I could definitely go either way with it.
I'm kind of with you on that. I'm still going to go with the formula that there's going to be two offensive linemen sitting this week because our entire offensive line starters are scheduled to play. And so I think they'll go with the regular deal. So I think it'll be Hawkins and Stymie who sit. I do think MJ Stewart's going to sit because there's no reason for him not to be honest with you. But I'm going to disagree about Cousin Daniels being the guy who sits. And I'm actually.
Oh, you're sitting. Huh? Yeah.
Who am I
sitting?
No. No, I'm sitting the other. I'm sitting the other new tight end. Yeah. Cody McIlroy. I'm sitting McIlroy because, you know, he's coming in as the, that new extra, tight end, and they'll play Leggett, I think, over McIlroy. And, they've only been going with three. So that's the reason I put those guys out there, but we'll see. You know, who knows if Cousin Daniels will ever actually get in, even if he is active. I just don't know, but we'll find out, you know, and it'll make us feel real good and warm and fuzzy on the inside, you know, about an hour before kickoff. But listen, guys, this weekend, 1 o'clock Saturday, just keep in mind, guys, Saturday, there will be a Tampa Bay Buccaneers game. I'll watch it however you get it. I'll be down there with my family at the stadium, have a nice little family trip planned. We're actually heading down a little bit early tomorrow. So, it should be a fun weekend, and we will be back this weekend with the Instant Cast. And then coming out, we'll enter in really, Ren, it's going to be our last week of the regular season. As we go through, we got one more of these Buck in the News shows for the years out, and, we'll be sad to send off the season. But
I'm going to be in draft mode.
Yay. I don't know. We'll be in award season for a little bit before we get to that. So, but anyway, David, man, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. It's always great to get to talk to you. And like I said, it's just good to talk to friends, you know, and bring
up some other,
voices. So, definitely appreciate it. Tell us what you got coming out over there at BucksNation.com and over at Locked On.
A lot of stuff. I'm writing pretty heavy these days, probably about six or seven things a week coming out over at Bucks Nation. But for the rest of the week, really just the X Factor and the Know Your Enemy, just covering one of the players from the other side. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, talking about Todd Bowles and his role in this weekend's action. And then, of course, you find me on Twitter at DH82_Bucks. And then over at Locked On Bucks Podcast. Always down to talk Buccaneers. Uh-oh. Football.
My lawyer will be calling.
Oh, snap. David, I would wave you off on that. I tried that one. And don't do that.
You can keep the oh snap there, buddy, if you want to. That one's all yours. What's great about David is he is a numbers guy, and he loves diving deep, and he loves looking into these things. No matter what you think about how silly it is about taking a safety at 19 for the Buccaneers, don't worry about it. He always got facts. He always backs it up. He always makes sure he knows what he's talking about. So if that's your type of something else you'd like to listen to, jump on over to Locked On Bucks Podcast, because they go at you 5 days a week, and that's a lot of the content that's there, besides sort of the back and forth. Although, albeit, it's not as good as with Brent and I, but mm-hmm. the back and forth with him and James is always fun to listen to. But if you want to stick with the number one team and you want to contact them on Twitter, it's at Rendax, RENDAXT. I'm always down to talk Buccaneers football.
As well, too. If you guys want to get in touch with me, you can find me at Brent Allen Live across all the social medias. And on Twitter, the show is at The Pewter Cast. And Facebook as well, you can find us at The Pewter Cast. And you can also send in emails. You guys want to shoot us email, you can do that to thepewtercast@gmail.com. Like I said, we'll be back with you guys later on this week, so you guys make sure you stay tuned for all of that. David, once again, thank you so much for joining us this week. And until next time, guys, we'll close the show out as always. Go Bucks!